The Rudy Valley Hour with Cornelia Otis Skinner, Colonel Lemuel Q. Stoopnagel, Maxie Rosenblum, Paul Garretts, Roderick Crawford, and Marjorie Main. Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and Company. Tonight, our Hollywood company welcomes two distinguished visitors from New York. One, a charming lady with an exceptional talent. Her name, Cornelia Otis Skinner. The other, a charming gentleman, slightly mad in a nice way. His name, Colonel Lemuel Q. Stoopnagel. Of course, both of these charming New Yorkers actually live in Connecticut, but so do a lot of other New Yorkers. In addition to Miss Skinner and the Colonel, our roster includes the prize ring's outstanding gift to the cinema, Mr. Maxie Rosenblum. And in addition to Mr. Maxie Rosenblum, we present Paul Garretts, a fellow of infinite jest. The more serious side of tonight's hour is represented by an original play, The Rock. The players, Roderick Crawford and Marjorie Main. The author, Adeline Bushnell. We feel that The Rock is one of the most powerful radio dramas we have come to present in some time. For approximately the next 60 minutes, then, we earnestly seek your attention in
The Rudy Valley Hour, Act One, presented by the makers of Royal Desserts, Royal Gelatin, and Royal Puddings.
In the nursery, there's music in the nursery, 'cause Mother Goose is on the loose, her kids are swinging out. There's mutiny in the nursery, there's music in the nursery, 'cause Mother Goose is on the loose, you ought to hear them shout. Oh, you should see Miss Jenny Jones, Jenny Jones, Jenny Jones. You should see Miss Jenny Jones, you'll see her swinging lightly. Lazy Mary won't get up, won't get up, won't get up. Lazy Mary won't get up, she stays out too late nightly. Little Bo Peep has lost her sheep, but she knows just where to find them. For they all stand around the van, wagging their tails, just wagging their tails behind them. One little, two little, three little jitterbugs, four little, five little, six little jitterbugs, seven little, eight little, nine little jitterbugs, ten little jitterbug boys. 10, 9, 8 alligators, 7, 6, 5 little cats, 4, 3, 2 little swingaroos, 1 little jitterbug girl. Little boy blue, go blow your horn. Jack be nimble on your clarinet. They're swinging out there on the loose. Somebody send for Mother Goose. Goosey, goosey gander, better truck home and join the jamboree, 'cause there is mutiny among the kids. They won't stay inside their cribs. They're all out to dance and sing. Swing around the rosy is the latest thing. And hi diddle diddle has a brand new swing. Oh, Mother Goose is going mad.
It's just a medley of three tunes from the Warner Brothers picture, Goin' Places. The tunes, Mutiny in the Nursery, Say It With a Kiss, Jeepers Creepers, for the Kingsmen and yours truly. Look, I've seen, say it with a kiss. There is wine and candle shine and music in your lips, magic in the touch of your fingertips. Words may not convey it, say it with a kiss. And your look might speak a book that my eyes might miss. You don't have to know the words to love's familiar tune. Say it with a kiss and say it soon. Tonight's company of charming people, we give you Paul Geritz, a scholar, a gentleman, and a wit. Paul approaches with a set of fabulous tales to test your credulity. We advise you not to believe a word he says. Here is Paul Geritz.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Rudy.
Yes, sir.
Hello. How are you tonight?
I'm fine.
Well, that's well. Rudy, should I tell him?
Sure, why not?
All right. Rudy and I were going down Sunset Boulevard this afternoon in his car. He's got really a nice car, and I guess we were going a little too fast or something because a policeman pulled up and said, get over to the curb there. So we got over, and the policeman said, let me see your driver's license. So Rudy said, well, I'm sorry, I haven't got it with me. He said, well, it'll be all right, though, he said, because I'm Rudy Valley. He said, well, you're Rudy Valley, huh? He said, well, you don't look like Rudy Valley to me. He said, how do I know you're Rudy Valley? Haven't you got any identification of any kind with you? He said, no, I haven't. He said, well, how can you prove that you're Rudy Valley to me? Rudy says, well, I could sing for you. He said, sing nothing. If you're really Rudy Valley, let me see you knock me down. Yes. I always like to start off with a sock gag. I have a few little stories I put together one morning. Some morning I'm going to take them apart again, but before I do, I'm going to be very generous and let you hear one of them. It's all about two rats, a brother and a sister, who were out snooping around in a house one night looking for things to gnaw on. And they gnawed on this and they gnawed on that, but they didn't seem to find anything that especially pleased them. So he finally found a piece of cheese in a trap, and he started to gnaw on this, and he liked it a lot. But when he started to leave with the cheese, the trap went off and caught him by the tail. So he ran off with the trap stringing along behind him, and he ran into the hole. But the trap was a little too big to go into the hole with him, so he backed out again, and when he came out, there was his sister laughing at him. He said, what are you laughing about? She said, well, you remind me of a double feature. He said, which double feature do I remind you of? And she said, brother rat, you can't take it with you. And, you know, and the moral of that story is, what you don't know won't hurt you. This story has no moral at all. It's just one of those screwball stories. It's about a fellow by the name of Stragmorth who was playing a game of tennis. It was really quite a tough game, but he finally hit the ball into the net, and he lost the game. Well, when he did, he jumped over the net, hit this fellow over the head with his tennis racket, crammed the tennis ball down his throat, pulled out a gun, and shot him in the leg. Then he sat down and started to cry. Well, two of his friends had been standing there watching the whole thing, and when this happened, one of them turned to the other one and he said, you know, I'm beginning to believe there's something in that rumor about him being a bad loser. Yeah. Now that the laughter has sufficiently subsided, I will try another one. If you don't like this one, tomorrow they'll be dragging the river for my body. But I won't be there. I'll be home in bed. It's all about Santa Claus and his workshop. It seems that one very cold, blustery night, Santa Claus was going through his shop just to check up on production. And the little elf that was supposed to make toy dolls was making toy dolls. And the little gnome that was supposed to be making bingo games was making bingo games. And everything seemed to be all right. But when he got to the little gnome that was supposed to be making little toy dogs, he wasn't doing a thing, just looking out at the storm and the sleet. Well, Santa Claus said, why is it, gnome? He said, I hired you to turn out dogs. You're not doing a thing. He said, well, Santa Claus, it's an awfully cold, windy night out. He said, I couldn't turn out a dog on a night like this. Yeah. That's a sort of a little kiddie story. I just did that because I thought maybe Dougie would be listening in. Dougie is my little nephew who lives back home in Appleton, Wisconsin. He's a cute little fella. We have a lot of fun together. There was a lady moved in, a whole family, in fact, moved into the block here just last week, and Dougie was sort of showing her around and telling her the names of the kids in the block and giving her a little local scandal. And finally, she looked across the street, and she saw two very pretty little girls over there. And she said, my, Dougie, aren't those two pretty little girls? She said, those are the prettiest little girls I've seen in a long while. Whose children are they? And Dougie said, oh, they're the doctor's children. I think he keeps the best ones for himself. Yes. Well, before I go, I must tell you this. I went to see a friend of mine the other night. He's a bachelor, and he's got a rather cute little place. He's got a bar downstairs, too, and of course, I don't drink myself. But he used to get up and run downstairs. He'd go down and fix himself a drink, and then he'd come back up. And every little while he'd do that. He'd run downstairs and get a drink, and then he'd come back up. And he did this about 7 or 8 times. Well, about his 13th trip down the stairs, I said to him, I said, you know, too much of that isn't good for you. He said, I know, those stairs are killing me. So... The next morning, he had the well-known shakes, the fairly well-known shakes anyway, and he stopped in at a bar to get a little bit of a bracer-upper on his way to work, sort of a hair of the dog that bit him. And he said, give me a scotch and soda. So the bartender set him up a scotch and soda, and he picked it up. He was going to drink it, but his hands were trembling and shaking so badly that he almost spilled the drink. So he set it down again quickly and looked around to see if there was anybody watching. So he picked it up again, and he was shaking and trembling like mad. But he finally managed to drink it without spilling a great deal of it. And so he said, give me another one. So the bartender gave him another one. And he picked this up, and he was still shaking and rattling pretty badly. But he finally took it in both hands and very determinedly drank the thing down. He got it down somehow. So he paid the bartender. And as he was going, he said, well, goodbye. He said, I got to go now. He said, I got to go to work. So the bartender said, by the way, he said, what are you doing these days? The fellow said, oh, the same old thing, repairing watches.
Last year on this program, we introduced a new dessert. A dessert every bit as good as the famous Royal Chocolate and Royal Vanilla puddings. The new Royal Butterscotch.
Presenting now Broderick Crawford and Marjorie Maine in The Rock, an original play by Adeline Bushnell. Those who were fortunate enough to see Of Mice and Men, one of Broadway's outstanding dramatic hits, last season well remember Broderick Crawford. His poignant playing of Lenny in that Steinbeck masterpiece won him the acclaim of all critical observers. Equally to be remembered for an important contribution to the best in drama is Marjorie Maine. Her portrayal of the killer's mother in the stage and screen version of Dead End will long remain fresh in the memory of those who witnessed it. Broderick Crawford and Marjorie Maine in The Rock. The scene is the drab kitchen of a dilapidated old New England farmhouse. A woman in late middle age is standing over the stove. She is stirring something in an iron kettle. Her tragic eyes are continually fixed on the man who sits by the window. A man in stature, but a second look at the face, and you know it's the mind of a little child in a great, strong body. He speaks.
Ma. Ma.
Yes, Cale.
Why can't I go out, Ma? Why can't I go out and play?
You can, Caleb, pretty soon. Pretty soon, son, you're going to play all the time. All the time where it's bright and sunny. And where nothing can ever hurt you.
Bright and sunny? I like the sun, Ma. It's all dark and rainy now.
It ain't dark, son. It's just a clouded over.
I'm afraid of the dark, Ma.
It ain't going ever to be dark again, Caleb. Not dark for you anymore, son.
If it ain't going to be dark, Ma, why can't I go back up the road by the woods?
No, son. You've got to stay here for a while.
I want to go. Maybe the little girl will play now.
Sing a song instead, Cale.
No.
Sing for Ma, Cale. Sing Rock of Ages for Ma. Come on, sing.
Rock of Ages, cleft for me.
What's Rock of Ages, Ma? I ain't never seen it.
You will see it, Cale. It's God's rock. It's something you can always cling to when you're in trouble.
What's trouble?
Don't you remember I showed you the picture of the rock in a book once?
No. No, I don't remember, Ma. Rock of Ages, cling.
Cleft, son.
What's cleft?
It'll open up. It'll hide you from them that's after you.
It'll open up?
That's right.
Oh, like the little girl's head, Ma. The little girl's head opened when I...
Hush, Caleb. You mustn't think of it no more.
But she wouldn't play when I asked her, Ma. She wouldn't play, Ma. She wouldn't play.
Son, why did you hit her?
So she'd mind me, Ma.
Ma never hits you when you don't mind.
Silas hits horses when they don't plow good.
Silas Masters?
Yeah. I says, what you hit him for, Silas? And Silas says, so he'll do what I want. So I hit the little girl.
He didn't know God. He didn't know.
She didn't care, Ma. She just fell down and went to sleep.
The rock opened for Cale, and she went in.
Cale's hungry, Ma.
I'm making you some bean porridge, Cale. You like that, don't you?
Yeah, I like that. What are you putting in it, Ma?
Don't you recollect, son, when Mom was taking care of poor old Aunt Leviny, how the doctor left stuff, and how Ma used to put it in Aunt Leviny's hot milk?
You wouldn't give Cale any.
Oh, that's because it was for Aunt Leviny, so the pain wouldn't hurt her.
Where'd she go, Ma?
She's gone where there ain't no pain, and where everyone's got a mind like other people. I'm a-giving you all of Aunt Leviny's leftover medicine, Cale. You're going with her. You're going home.
No, this is home.
But the men won't let you stay here, son. Not when they find out what you... Hush, Cale. Nothing, Cale. But I'll dish up the porridge and you must eat it. We ain't got much time.
Time for what?
To get to sleep before the men get here.
I don't want to sleep, Ma. I want to go out and play in the woods.
Sit here at the table, son, and eat. And when you wake up, you're going to find the little girl. You're going to be playing on golden woods.
The soup's hot, Ma. What's golden woods?
All yeller and shining. Keep on eating, Cale.
Yeller and shiny? Oh, those are foolish woods, Ma. Them's foolish woods.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't believe they're foolish. I believe they'll be golden and happy. And they'll take care of poor little fellers that can't think for themselves, Cale. Poor little foolish fellers.
Like me, Ma?
How'd you know enough to say that, Cale?
Say what?
When Ma said poor little foolish fellers, you said, like me. How'd you know that, Cale?
Oh, because the little girl I hit with a stick said so. I asked her to play with me, and she said she wouldn't because I was foolish, and her Ma said not to play with me. That's why I hit her, Ma. Then she fell down, and she wouldn't get up, Ma. And then you came, and you made me come
there,
home, Ma.
There, there, Sonny, don't cry. Just eat your food. And then you'll sleep for a while. And when you wake up, you'll find the little girl, and then she'll play with you, Cale.
She will?
Yes, because you'll both be where everything is made right.
Oh, then I'll eat the food fast, Ma.
That's right. And Ma'll tell you a story.
What story?
Once upon a time, there was a woman whose husband was drowned at sea.
Like my pa was?
Yes, like your pa. And the woman had no money. And a little son just beginning to walk and talk.
Was he like me, Ma?
Yes, like you, Caleb.
Why, I feel...
How you feel, Caleb?
Oh, all prickly like. Don't go away, Ma.
Ma's staying right beside you, Cale. Finish your porridge.
I'm sleepy, Ma.
Don't close your eyes, son. Not till you eat all your food first. Because Ma's got to be sure. Listen to Ma's story.
All right.
After the woman's husband was lost at sea, and the woman had no money, and sometimes there weren't no bread for the little boy to eat.
Don't want to eat sleepy, Ma.
But you might wake up again. Here. And it mustn't be. See, Ma's taking a spoon and feeding you the rest of the plate full.
All right.
And the woman used to have to walk 7 miles up to the town to do people's washing, and then walk the 7 miles back so her and the son could have something to eat.
Eat like me, Ma?
Like you, Caleb. That's right, swallow the porridge. And when she went to work up to the town, the woman used to leave her son at the house of a neighbor a mile up the road.
Road by the woods, Ma? I don't want to eat no more.
Oh, just a little more. It's almost gone. And the woman left her son at the neighbor's house up the road. And one day, when she walked them 7 miles back, after standing over the washtub all day, she found that her son had been hurt.
What hurt him, Ma?
Just one more spoonful, son. A couple of drunken men hurt him, Caleb. They was town men, and they ought to known better. But they was hunting rabbits, and they'd been a-drinking, and they stopped at the neighbor's house, where the woman had left her baby son.
Like me, Ma?
Yeah, like you, Caleb. And them two drunken men started to play with the little boy, tossed him from one to t'other. And they dropped him and hurt his head something awful.
Like the little girl's head I hit with a stick, Ma?
I wish it had been like her, son. But it weren't God's will. Not then. No, the woman's baby lived and grew up. But something inside his head didn't grow up. And though outside he was a big, strong man, he was just a little boy inside. And he wanted to play with other little boys and girls. And it made it awful hard for the woman. Listen.
Don't hear nothing, Ma.
Listen. I thought I heard an automobile coming.
Don't hear nothing.
It'll come all right. Caleb. Caleb, wake up. Wake up, son. You must finish every drop of your porridge.
What are you crying for, Ma?
Maybe because I'm glad. Maybe because I'm glad it'll soon all be over. And we'll both be a-resting on that rock.
What rock, Ma?
Rock of Ages. Rock of Ages. Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
See? There's just a little more to eat. Just a little more, Caleb.
Ain't we got to save it for tomorrow, Ma?
No, for once we ain't got to think about tomorrow. There ain't going to be no call for about words and about meals tomorrow, son. There. It's all gone. You don't have to eat no more.
I'm so sleepy.
Can you say something for Ma, son, before you go to sleep?
Don't want to.
Yes, you do. Say it, son. Now I lay me.
No. Can't.
Listen. It's the car. It's the sheriff. Caleb, you must listen. Listen to Ma. Say it, Caleb. Now I lay me.
Now I lay me.
Down to sleep. Caleb, down to sleep.
Down sleep.
I pray the Lord.
Pray, Lord.
My soul to keep. They're getting out. It's the sheriff. Wake up, son. You've got to say it. My soul to keep.
My soul keep.
If I should die, Caleb, son, you mustn't go without saying it. If I should die.
If I should die.
Before I wake. Caleb, son, before I wake.
Before I wake.
I pray the Lord. Caleb! Oh, he's dead. He's dead. I pray the Lord his soul to take.
Thank you.
Lorraine Warren and Rudy blend voices now in Just a Little Love, a Little Kiss.
When the scented night of summer covers field and city with her veil of blue, all the lanes are full of straying lovers murmuring the words I say to you. Just a little love, a little kiss, just an hour that holds a world of bliss, eyes that tremble like the stars above me, and the little word that says you love me. Poor Amperdamour, Amperdamour, set a star divine, maybe at Rocco, Father Curz a set a star supreme. Cities are the more the sir, je t'aime. A suggestion from your grocer we'd like to give to you. This week, he suggests you try Royal Butterscotch. The Valley Hour continues after a brief pause for station identification.
WEAF, New York.
To resume where we left off, we resume where we left off. To help us, such skillful resumers as Maxie Rosenblum, Cornelia Otis Skinner, Colonel Lemuel Q. Stoopnagel in
The Rudy Valley Hour, Act Two, presented by Fleischmann's High Vitamin Yeast.
takes all kinds of people to make a town like this, Hollywood. One of the most colorful citizens of this extremely colorful community is that fellow of many accomplishments, the eminent and amiable Maxie Rosenblum. One-time light heavyweight champion of the world, Maxie is now an actor of considerable importance. Over at Warner Brothers, where he does his thespian chores, he is one of the busiest players on the lot. He has just finished Women in the Wind and is currently lending his talents to Professor Steps Out and Broadway Cavalier. In addition, Maxie is the proprietor of one of the town's most popular night spots, where he sings an occasional song and indulges in some highly expert clowning. In between times, he does a spot of boxing, at which he is still more than fair. Time does not hang heavily on Maxie Rosenblum's hands. He enters forthwith.
Thank you. Rudy, as an actor of the film colony, I welcome you back to Hollywood.
Thank you.
As one nightclub entertainer to another, I also welcome you back to Hollywood.
Well, that's very nice.
As one fighter to another, I welcome you back to girl Hollywood.
I'm really getting it today. Are you finished?
I hope not.
Maxie, I'm sure that a lot of us would like to know just how you managed to find the time to do so many things. Movies, fighting, nightclubbing, and now the radio. How do you do it?
I don't know, Rudy. I guess I'm just a human domino. Hey, but you left one thing out.
What was that?
I just originated a comic strip called Famous Finnegan. I guess my possibilities are absolutely limited.
There's more than a little truth in that.
Yeah, many a true word is spoken in jest. Holy smoke, did that come out of me?
I'm afraid it did. Another question, Mr. Rosenblum. Which art do you find more difficult, the cinema or prize fighting?
Well, honest, Rudy, I think the movies are easier, because when someone sucks in movies, they're only kidding. But I'm not kidding about this acting racket. I'm serious. And so are Warner Brothers. Do you know that they got me taking diction lessons and they're paying $68.50 a copy?
What's the 50 cents for?
Well, I guess I only learned about 50 cents worth. Maybe it has helped me after all. The other night, I called my mother up in New York City. My diction teacher was in a room, so I kind of thought I'd show off a little bit. I said, "Hello, mother, how are you?" She said, "What?" I said, "Hello, mother, how are you?" She says, "Get off the phone and put Maxie on."
Art is a hard taskmaster, Mr. Rosenblum.
You're right. Sometimes I just don't know how I will carry on.
In case you're interested, that came out of you too, Mr. Rosenblum.
Yeah, ain't I cut up? But I digress.
You what?
I digress.
Oh.
Yeah. I want to tell you about some amusing incidents in my fights. I remember one time I was fighting King Fist Levinsky, and he gave me the heat of his glove under the chin. Now, you know that wasn't fair. So I stuck my thumb in his eye. That's a trick that some of us boxing masters use when things get going tough.
Seems like a little trick.
Oh, it's cute. Well, anyway, the Kingfish and I went along for 5 or 6 rounds. And then he gave me the heel again. This time I stuck my thumb in his eye and twisted it. The referee focused and he said, "If we do that again, I'll disqualify her." The Kingfish said, "I'm sorry, I won't do it no more."
If I remember correctly, the Kingfish is the fellow who said that after Joe Louis hit him, he felt mum all over.
That's the Kingfish. I saw him the other day on Vine Street. I was coming back from the studio and I had my makeup on. He said, "You're making a picture, huh?" That's the way he talked. "I'm going to make a picture, too." I said, "You're going to make a picture. Do you talk?" He said, "What do you think I am, a rat? I don't squeal on nobody."
To take up another of your many activities, Maxie, how do you like being a nightclub proprietor?
It's great. You know the reason I open up my joint?
Now, I don't think that I'm familiar with that particular incident in your career. How did you happen to open the nightclub?
Well, because nobody would ever let me sing. I figured that if I owned my own place, I could sing all I wanted to. And let me tell you that for a guy who never took a lesson in his life, I certainly am awful.
Your modesty is very becoming, Mr. Rosenblum.
That's me, Rudy. A very vulnerable gent. And let me tell you something. You know, ever since I'm acting in the movies, I'm a lackadaisical lad. At times, I'm exasperated and feel imitated.
Just a minute, Maxie. The word is intimidated.
Please, Mr. Valley. As one artist to another, please. At times, I'm exasperated and feel intimidated at my incompatibility of cinema. And I know now I'm exhilarating. All my friends say I'm nauseating, but I'll keep my punctualities.
No, it's potentialities, Maxie.
Please, Mr. Valley, can I help it if my ignorance is refreshing?
But at least when you're bad, you're consistent.
Gee, Mr. Valley, thanks. Should we try it again?
Yes, let's give it a bit of a go.
We should try it again.
Yeah,
so I'll keep my potentialities up to par. I'm a lackadaisical lad. With you lads and lassies, I'm a lackadaisical lad. And I'm not procrastinating. I'm a lackadaisical lad. It's a Rudy Valoo review.
Gee,
I don't want to go home yet. I want to act some more.
Look, Max, look. If you'll go off, I'll give you some C-A-N-D-Y.
Dope. He knows I don't smoke.
We want to answer a question that seems to be bothering a good many housewives these days. We've asked a typical housewife to bat for her sisters, Mrs. Jane J. Housewife.
Well, what's bothering me is, do many of the troubles people have really come from not getting enough?
We consider ourselves very fortunate in that Cornelia Otis Skinner's current tour in her one-woman theater brought her to these often sunny climes. As you know, Cornelia, daughter of famed Otis Skinner, is best known for her truly remarkable skill in presenting a whole play all by herself. This weekend, Miss Skinner appears at the Los Angeles Philharmonic Auditorium in Edna, His Wife, and The Wives of Henry VIII. I, for one, do not intend to miss either performance. I would like her to tell you herself about the sketch she's going to do for us tonight. Miss Cornelia Otis Skinner.
I shall do a sketch called Being Presented. The scene is in the bedroom of a London hotel the evening of one of the presentation courts at Buckingham Palace. An American lady is nervously getting ready to be presented. She's standing in front of a mirror, fussing with a traditional three feathers and talking to a friend.
Now then, Blanche, be honest. Would you wear these this way or would you wear them this way? This way or this way? Oh, that's the waiter. Come in. Do you want anything, Blanche? You sure you don't want anything? Well, I do, waiter. I want a whiskey and soda. A double whiskey and soda, and hurry, will you, please? Now then, which way did you say you like these feathers, Blanche? This way. I wish you could wear them drooping. Or spread out, kind of like Gabby DeLee. Do you remember Gabby DeLee? Wasn't she gorgeous? But you can't. You got to wear them this way. They're about as becoming to me as a boudoir bonnet. Wait till Virgil sees me. He'll die. Oh, glory, that was my shoulder strap. Oh, could you, Blanche? It's just where I can't reach it, you know. Oh, no, my dear. Virgil thinks I'm crazy to be doing all this. I shouldn't wonder if he was right. But then, Blanche, you know, Uncle Joe, being a senator and knowing the ambassador, I thought it would be an experience. Holy mackerel, I expect it will be. Can't you find that strap, Blanche? This darn brassiere that woman talked me into buying in Paris. Do you want a pin or would you like a needle and thread? Well, wait a minute. Here's a needle and thread. I might as well get sewn in for the winter. What, my train? No, it's meant to be like that. It's all part of the uniform. It's kind of funny, isn't it? I hope I don't trip over it. Oh, say, wouldn't that be terrible if I tripped? Oh, Lord, I wish they'd hurry with that whiskey and soda. I need it, I can tell you, that long wait in the mall out there. I wish Mrs. Schuster and I could take a flask with us. Oh, no, it's one of those things that isn't done, I guess. If the British can stand it, I can. What's the use of being born in Nebraska if you haven't got courage? Oh, Lord, that back garter's come unfastened again. Blanche, could you? Thanks, I can't reach them, you know. This girdle on, I might as well be wearing a suit of armor out of the Tower of London. Ooh, my gloves. Yes, they're a part of it, heaven help me. Haven't worn gloves like these since Mary Garden came to Moose River Falls. Can't you find that garter, Blanche? Well, keep on angling for it. You'll find it.
Listen, here comes Virgil.
I know his walk. I was hoping he wouldn't get here till after I'd gone. No such luck. Hello, Virg. What did I tell you, Blanche? There's no circus parade at all, Virgil. You know perfectly well where I'm going. I'm going to Buckingham Palace. I'm going to be presented to the King and Queen. Did you hear him, Blanche? He says what a present that'll be for the King and Queen. Yeah, Blanche is here. She's here back of me. She's conferring on me the Order of the Garter. What are you laughing at, Virgil? I don't see what's so funny about me. Just because you're so provincial. Well, now then, Blanche, how do I look? What do you think I look like? I think I look kind of cute. These are the three feathers of the Prince of Wales. Lend them to me? Of course he didn't lend them to me. They're part of the court costume. Don't you like them? Oh, Virgil, what a fool you are. They don't make me look like a circus pony at all. Now, listen, Virgil, don't get me all upset. It's all right for you and Blanche. You don't have to go through with this thing, but I do, and I don't mind telling you I'm three jumps ahead of a fit. Why am I doing it? Because I owe it to my hometown. Nearest anyone from there will ever get to royalty again is seeing the newsreel at the Bijou Movie Palace. Jerusalem, the things I've done for Nebraska. Come in. Oh, thank you, waiter. Just put it over here, will you? No, that's all, thanks. That is a double whiskey and soda. It's for me. All of it. I might as well be drunk as the way I feel. Any minute now, I'm sharing a carriage with another American. She's coming by for me. We're going to play backgammon on the way. You know, you have to wait for ages and ages. In the mall, in your carriage. No, Virgil, we are not going in a hearse, and you're not funny. Well, you drive to the palace, then you all wait in a big room. At least that's what they tell me. Then you pass on by the king and queen. You don't say anything to them at all. They merely bow and you curtsy. Mrs. Schuster and I have been taking lessons in it. You ought to see us. Well, we're about evenly matched. She weighs more, but I creak more. Oh, my goodness, my knees. I forgot all about them. They crack. It's that old arthritis, you know. Well, you don't want the king and queen to hear me with my knees cracking, do you? Well, thank you very much. It's not the kind of attention I want. Oh, Lord. I wish this were all over. I tell you, I've got real stage fright about this curtsing business. You know, Virgil, that left knee of mine, you've seen yourself what it does sometimes. I can get down all right. The question is, can I get up again? What'll happen if I can't get up? Will they just leave me there? Say, listen, Blanche, will you go with me to the photographer's tomorrow? I'm having my photograph taken in all this. I thought they might want it for the Sunday paper at home. No, Virgil, not the funny sheet. Why don't you think it'd be nice to have my picture in court costume? For the children, it'll amuse them. I don't know what you mean and how. Oh, there's the phone. I bet it's going to be Mrs. Schuster. Hello? Yes? What? Oh. All right, tell her I'll be right down. Yes, my dear, it's my carriage. I wish it were an ambulance. Virgil, help me with my wrap. You two are going to the music halls, aren't you? Well, whatever you see at the Alhambra will be nothing in the act I pull at Buckingham. Let's see, I've got my gloves and my fan. Oh, Lord, I started a run in my stocking. No, I haven't time to change now. I'll fix it with spit in the carriage. Well, goodbye, you two. I tell you, I feel like one of the Light Brigade. There's not a reason why, there's but to do and die. Into the jaws of death, into the mouth of Strode the Nebraskan.
George Abbott presents The Boys from Syracuse, based on Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors. They say it's the best thing yet on Broadway. Music by Rodgers and Hart, and like Cole Porter tunes, Roger's melodies and harmonies require repetition before you really begin to like them. But you're going to hear a lot of them in the future. The score from The Boys from Syracuse. Love because I feel so well. No sobs, no sorrows, no sighs. This can't be love, I get no dizzy spell. My head is not in the skies. My heart does not stand still, just hear it beat. This is too sweet to be loved. This can't be love because I feel so well, but still I love to look in your eyes.
Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast.
Songbirds have to eat, tweet, 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 if their song is sweet to hear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sing for your luncheon
and you'll get dinner, dine with wine of choice. If romance is in
your voice,
romance, romance. Oh, I heard from a wise canary, trilling makes a fellow willing. So little swallow, swallow now.
Sing for your supper
and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds are not dumb. They don't buy a crumb of bread, it's said. So sing and you'll be fed.
The smile on your face is the greatest kind of embrace, and a single kiss is a thousand dreams come true. Longest night of the year, and the longest night is the shortest night ago, we received a wire from our talent scout covering the New England territory to the effect that he had unearthed a promising ticket. He further advised that this gentleman could be prevailed upon to hie himself westward. After we had done sufficient prevailing, he turned up and turned out to be our old friend, the candidate for ex-sheriff of South Norwalk, Colonel Lemuel Q. Stupnagel.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Rudy, it was mighty fine of you to invite me to come all the way to California for the show tonight, as you did. You know, living as I do in South Norwalk, Connecticut, way over on the other side of the country, like it is, it was naturally a long ride out here, as it was. There were times, of course, when it got a little monotonous, as it got, but all in all, the whole trip was intensely interesting, by and large. Are you boring me?
No, not at all. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Colonel. As you did, all in all, by and large. A little expensive, though, as I recall it.
Oh, don't apologize for a moment, Rudy. That part of it was perfectly all right. Shucks, I couldn't expect you to stand part of my traveling expenses, too. I should be happy to do it for my meals. After all, the cost was very little. When you drive out, you not only get to see the country, but it's a great saving. And the hitchhikers, they're frightfully annoying, aren't they?
Yeah, but definitely.
They're not... They're not intelligent, and besides, they're selfish, and they're often mean. I hated being one.
Gee, Willikins, Colonel, don't tell me you thumbed your way out here.
Well, gee, Willikins, Rudy, if I didn't, you better get somebody else for this spot, because I'll never make it.
For you, Colonel, we'll wait. How long ago did you leave South Norwalk, Colonel?
Rudy, do you remember the last great war?
Oh, vividly. Bombs bursting in air, Great Lakes training station, Uncle Sam, sailor boys, Lafayette, we are here. 1917, I believe it was.
Yes. That was one of the years the song Over There was being sung over here. And that other dilly-ditty, pack all your whatchamacallits in an old kit thing and smile three times.
Recall it as though it only yesterday, Colonel. But don't tell me you started this trip to California way back in 1917.
Well, I don't know about that, but when I left South Norwalk, I remember people saying in the bowling alleys, quote...
Quote? Quote what?
Do you expect me to remember what people were saying way back in 1917?
No, I guess not. But notwithstanding 1917, I'm really glad that you're here tonight, Colonel, because I've been doing a little inventing.
Absolutely. And to prove it, I have just invented the darnest thing you ever heard tell of.
No.
Yes. My invention is a doorbell that when you press the button, it rings 10 minutes ago.
You press the button and the doorbell rings 10 minutes ago.
Yes, listen. You see? There it goes now. And I won't press the button until 10 minutes yet.
What's this invention for, Colonel?
Huh?
What's this invention for?
Well, it's just in case someone comes up to you and says, hey, do you happen to have a doorbell that when you press the button, it rings 10 minutes ago?
I'm an inventor of parts myself, Colonel. I once invented...
You did, eh? Well, have you seen my new wristwatch, Rudy?
No.
Look, isn't that peachy?
Well, I'll be darned. A wristwatch that's tattooed on your arm.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell time with it?
Certainly. Right now it says, about 4 minutes of nine.
Amazing. Exactly correct. How'll you be able to tell when it's, say, midnight?
Oh, I have another watch tattooed on the other wrist that says 12 o'clock. Once in a while, I use it for noon, too.
Here's one I bet you haven't got. 4:32 and a half.
Well, I'll tell you, Rudy, that watch has been running a little fast lately, what with my high blood pressure. You know, I meant to leave it at the jeweler, but he needs it for a whole week, and I can't stand leaving my right arm there for more than a day at a time. Do you blame me?
Not at all, but didn't it hurt to have watches tattooed on your wrists?
Well, the tattooing was nothing at all, Rudy, but I have to take a local anesthetic every time I wind them. Then I have another invention, Rudy. It's a pair of field glasses that when you look through them at the horses before a race, it'll show you the actual horse that's going to win.
Really? Mm-hmm. That ought to be worth a fortune.
Yes, and it's very simple, too. All you have to do is look at the right horse. You know what a horse is, don't you?
Vaguely, Colonel.
Well, now, here's my definition of a horse. A horse is a thing that is of a different color than. And it also, after a race is over and he wins, you had another.
Horses are also what the fellow sings that he's crazy over. Crazy over, crazy over, isn't he?
Yes, he sir. Oh, absolutely. And also, but you can't make him drink even if you lead to water, too. And that reminds me of my definition of water. Water is stuff that people go on the wagon of it, or it's what a lot of has gone over the dam since whatever it has gone over the dam since it went over. Yeah. Well, good night, Rudy, and thanks.
Good night, Colonel. It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Good night, and thanks to you, Rudy, too.
Rudy, too, to you, Colonel.
Rudy, too.
Studies show a large proportion of people are not eating enough vitamins. That's why many people are nervous, run down, have nasty colds.
Next week, another big variety show with names that you know. The Valley Company continues on in its fourth week at the glamorous Coconut Grove. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.